Hello and welcome back to the Content That Grows podcast. Today we're jumping right in. We're going to talk about Webflow. We see a lot of conversations, especially in our line of work, around like which CMS should I be using, which web hosting platform, etc. And Webflow has honestly caught fire. So I think even since 2020, but especially recently, if you go look up exploding topics, you'll see that the growth and interest of this platform has grown over 700% in the last 5 years. And exponentially so most recently. So I think a good starting place for us would actually just be kind of to toss this over to you, Nate, on like, why is 10 Speed's website built on Webflow? And like, what made you and Kevin decide to start with using this platform?
Yeah, so I think there were two things. One is early on, as we were having conversations with folks, and I think two of our three first clients at 10 Speed were on Webflow. So the question would come up quite a bit, like, can you work with Webflow? And the tone around it, and it still exists even somewhat today, but the tone around it was sort of like, oh, we're using this like offshoot CMS that people don't usually use. Like, is that okay? Can you work with that? And so, initially there was a bit of like, hey, I gotta check this out, like make sure it is gonna work for what we need to do. And so in doing so, just kind of saw like, hey, there's some interesting stuff about this. And we're able to kind of get in. And my first impression when I got into Webflow was this feels like like the whole like right hand panel and all the like controls you have around styling and everything. It sort of felt like getting into like Photoshop or Illustrator or something, where you have like just a lot of stuff available to you. And so we'll touch on that a little bit more later, but just kind of saw an opportunity to like do that. Our initial site was built on Squarespace. We're already ready to move off. Like, didn't feel that was like the long-term solution. And had enough experience with some of the frustrating parts of WordPress the past that didn't necessarily want to go that route. And so felt like that was kind of an opportunity to get some hands-on experience, learn more about the platform. That would also just help us have a better knowledge set around that and help clients with that. So did that, and it's worked out well, because I think over half of our clients are on Webflow. So we've kind of indirectly or unintentionally to some extent kind of developed a bit of a specialty in understanding how to work with that and give some good guidance. So yeah, so kind of happened into it a little bit, but been pretty happy with that decision and the knowledge that we've gained along the way.
Yeah, I was initially pretty excited when I joined 10 Speed that we were on it. Because I wasn't as familiar, but I enjoyed that we had our own playground as a website and working with clients that were on it. So I didn't feel like, okay, I'm gonna break something before I know how to properly use this tool.
Yeah.
And like, I do like initially definitely like feeling some frustration, but it actually reminds me a little bit of like the debate that happens between like, are you an Android or an Apple? And like, for most of us, it doesn't really matter which UI or phone we use, but it is frustrating if you try to switch between the two. Like, I own an Apple phone, and
I've spoken like a true green bubble texter. Turn the whole group text green, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I stand by Android, but I think a lot of the frustration is just like initially learning where everything's at, because it's so different, and you're like, you get an open source environment with WordPress that has all these like plugins and kind of developers can really kind of choose the playground they want to build, and everyone else has to deal with that frustrating experience. Versus Webflow is like, we've really packaged this with a lot of guardrails. Like, you can still customize it, but 99% of the time, like, everything exists within this ecosystem, and we have all the instructions for you.
Yep.
Did you have something you wanted to add there?
No, you're good.
Cool. I think that sort of leads into, like, you know, what do you think that, what do you think is causing this initial, like, excitement for Webflow, especially for, like, marketers and SaaS companies?
So I think there's a few things. In terms of the excitement, I think some of it is just generally some of the, like, virality and traction that happens in the SaaS world. I think there's a lot of times that someone has good success with it, and then, you know, their investors know about it, so then their investors start telling their other portfolio companies, and sort of just like the referral aspect of that can happen, I think, a decent amount in within SaaS companies in the SaaS space. So I think there's maybe an aspect of that. I think another is development resources are not widely available for marketing purposes in early stage companies. And so that's typically something where you need to be able to have a little more hands-on and be able to build stuff on your own. And not that, you know, WordPress and others can't do that, but one of the things that I think has been a bit unique is that, as I mentioned before, sort of felt like logging into Photoshop or something, is that there's a lot of designers that have, I think, really become empowered. And I've certainly worked with a number of them where they ultimately are the ones actually building out a lot of that. So, like, a lot of folks with that sort of design dev or full stack designer type of skill set, and perhaps normally they wouldn't fully be building out and customizing everything, but because of the way that Webflow works and how you can actually customize a lot of that, I think it's sort of empowered a new group to be able to take the lead and make sure that, like, the website is strong and looks good and is functional without maybe having to try to find outsourced dev or tap into the folks that are trying to, you know, actively build your product and get stuff out the door. So I would say that's probably most of it in terms of excitement. I think the other two things would just be, I think it's very well suited for use of templates. And then lastly, kind of what I was alluding to a little bit before, like, it can help cut out some of the complexity of plugins and compatibility and some of that stuff that, like, WordPress and some of those sort of open source are great because they, you can just go grab a plugin for whatever, an opt-in form and a plugin for SEO and a plugin for this. But you can also run into compatibility issues, and then you're very stuck in needing developers to really be able to dig in and understand what's going on and how to fix it. And you just may not understand as much. So I think it kind of helps cut out some of those risks and the complexity on that side for the team to be able to just continue to do what they need to do without a lot of development help.
Yeah, for sure. It kind of echoes what Emily Kramer mentioned, you know, and like why she's pretty bullish on Webflow, which is like, there's the dev aspect, and then there's also like, well, make sure marketers can own the website. And in a lot of ways, Webflow makes it very easy to iterate on copy and make changes without needing to, like, you know, issue a Jira ticket and like get the simplest things changed. And sort of interestingly, and we can use this as a transition into like the next point, but like the plugins aspect, I feel like is something I've definitely benefited from in the WordPress ecosystem.
Yeah.
You know, and its ability to like easily create title tags and meta descriptions and like not needing to like build that into a template beforehand. So it let me like operate as a content person on one page. Like if I'm uploading into a CMS, like here we go, versus like there are plugins that I wish Webflow had. Especially when operating in collections pages. So if I'm on a blog page, for example, like I really wish there were just a quick plugin for a sticky newsletter CTA on the side, or I really wish there was a plugin for recommended articles that are already on the site to sit at the bottom. And without those, it's sort of like, well, I need enough help, or I need to go train myself to be able to build this functionally. That like in some ways WordPress really just like made it easy for me to maybe create a bad habit, which was like not actually learning how those things work or function. But I had, as a marketer, I appreciated some of those plugin features.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely certainly areas of Webflow that I think will develop over time, because it is still it's still a pretty young platform. So I think a lot of those things will continue to come over time. But yes, to your point, like, sure, so I guess for anyone that doesn't use Webflow, collections are like basically your way to have a consistent place to build out. So like a blog posts would be a collection. So every time you open up a new collection item, it's going to be the blog post layout. It's tied to the visual templates. It allows you to have, like, so we have a collection for blog posts, we have a collection for our podcast episodes, case studies, and so on. So yes, you could build into the collection template like like three places where you as the author could drop in URLs for recommended reading, and those could, you know, potentially drop in the featured image, or could pull it in, and like you could kind of dynamically build that. But in some of the ways, it's not really dynamic. It is static to each post that you're having to manually curate which posts, versus having something that can kind of understand through tagging or whatever the relation of content and kind of recommend some of that. So there are some of those things. And then CTA, I think, is the other part, which is that you can have some of those functionalities. It just, some aspects still do ultimately veer a bit more into like development side, that, you know, it's going to be a beyond, you know, what you might be able to do within like the visual design, and really might need to have something that's a bit weightier, or, you know, embedding code or something to really be able to fully function the way you want with a, like a sticky CTA or something like that. So yeah, I think there's a certainly still some trade-offs there, but you know, if from my experience and having a larger site, and for anyone who's worked on that before, like it gets really annoying when you have like the WordPress updates themselves, which are not like a small thing, and then any updating WordPress itself can break compatibility with plugins. Then every single plugin typically has their own updates. And so you kind of just have this like hot potato almost all the time, that's like kind of trying to understand what's affecting performance, and you know what's going to happen when you update one, and some of that really can become quite a challenge over time. And yeah, in my experience, has literally taken down a site
for sure, you
know, for hours just for like for hitting update.
Yeah. You almost need a dev to update everything. Yeah. Not to mention, I guess I'll go against my own argument a little bit. There are also times when you'd get in and you'd see 50 plugins implemented. And, you know, if you're agency side and you go to the client, you say like, well, okay, which of these are like, are you actively using across the site? And which ones can we get rid of, so we're not bogging this whole thing down?
Yep.
You know, if they've had multiple turnovers of staff and no one knows anymore, it's like,
yep,
they're very rarely making, like, documenting those changes and processes. So now you're sort of, feels like you're diffusing a bomb trying to get rid of plugins.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It can be quite complex. Yeah.
Nice. Any other frustrations you want to air out on, like, things you have experienced with Webflow that you're like, eh, this gets a little sticky?
I would say things we've run into, there's been some more recent updates, but I still think the permissions and access levels are not great. For example, there are a number of plugins to handle redirects in WordPress and whatnot, but the only way to be able to manage redirects in Webflow is like admin level permissioning, whether it's through like the agency access or just as a user on the account. And that obviously brings a lot, like you jump a lot in terms of responsibility, things you can affect and whatnot, just to be able to implement some 301. So some of that I think is still challenging. One of the biggest gripes, which has been improved, was that you could have multiple people in the site working on it. So like I'm working on something, you're working on something, I publish my changes and it just publishes your changes with it. That was a big issue for a while that's been resolved. And then the last thing is just because you have a bit more control over design and styling and everything, it can be quite easy to break styling, because in everything you're doing, you have to be adding classes, that's ultimately guiding and building out your CSS file. But like, if you're just kind of moving a little too quick, not paying attention, and you have sort of like this paragraph styling and you change it from left aligned to center and you forget that, or someone just doesn't know who's in there, like, oh, that's actually, the global styling, and now you just made all text that uses the paragraph styling centered. Like, there's just some things that you feel like, kind of dust your hands and I did it, I made it look nice, I published it, and then you move on, and then someone's like, hey, this looks terrible, what's going on? You kind of have to decode that. So there are certainly ways that I think if people set it up well from the start, that it kind of helps prevent that, but it is still possible, and so therefore I think that kind of continues to be a frustration for some people, or just a potential downside.
Yeah, for sure. I would echo the permissions part. Even Kevin and I were kind of going back and forth last week. Again, as simple as like, I just want to implement a 301 redirect and needing complete site admin and like potentially, depending how you set it up, giving you access to like billing information, and all of a sudden you're like, I don't need to be here, I just want to implement a redirect. The other two, one's kind of minor, but I do think it's a headache, which is like having two tabs open from the same browser login while you're trying to edit the site, will like force you out of the editor. I find that really annoying as a workaround. Obviously, you can just like log in to another browser, or another account and kind of do the back and forth, but it's just like, I just want to copy and paste some of these links or phrases or CTAs really quickly. And so that can be frustrating. And then I think another thing, and a big reason why we built our Webflow and SEO resource that's on our blog, is it's so relatively new that there's a lot of information that just doesn't exist around like how to properly optimize. I do think that their information library, I think they call it the Webflow Academy, is great, and like the videos are like super entertaining and simple, and they're straightforward. They have a great sense of humor, but I do think at the end of the day, like some of the other stuff you're trying to do is like scattered across the academy, and when it's something like building a table of contents, or it's how to make outbound links attributed as rel equals nofollow. Now you're in their forum and you're kind of digging around hoping someone responded in a coherent way. So I think that's still lacking a little bit.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, I think there's a lot of great videos in there and details on the core functionality. But yes, there's a lot of use cases, edge cases that are not represented. That I think would be helpful.
For sure. And then, you know, I guess to wrap up, like, I think we've covered some of this already, but like, are there any notable differences between like trying to build out and optimize content on Webflow that you've noticed versus on other platforms that you think are worth calling out?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, sort of from like a from a visual standpoint, I do think, so if you just want to be able to add a little bit more detail or interest into something you're building out, whether it's a page or content within the post or something, like there's also more flexibility for animation type of stuff. So things happening kind of related to the scroll pattern or whatever that might be, or kind of coming into view in the viewport, stuff like that. Like there's some cool stuff you can build that doesn't require custom development. So I think that is nice, just to like, again, sort of just create a good user experience, like make sure that there's something unique and compelling to your content. A challenging thing for sure is that like building out table of contents with the jump links is convoluted. And so we obviously have a good process for it now, but it took some time to figure out. It's a great example of a thing that was not really well documented. And so some of that, I think, has been more challenging than just saying like, yes, let's just add in the plugin or check a box to say we want a table of contents on this page. Like it's a bit more challenging. And I think, you know, one of the other things that's helpful for optimization, especially globally, that we didn't really talk about yet, is just that there's some good options within the custom code in the settings section. So again, does require like the admin, but there are some good ways that you can actually, they consistently host images and fonts in like specific domains, subdomains that you're allowed to set up some smart like pre-connect type of stuff. We did cover this as well in the blog post that was created, that just allows to like, basically a quick explanation is like, as the page starts loading, telling the browser, hey, we're gonna need images from this domain at some point on this page, so go ahead and start making that connection now instead of waiting until it's time to load. And so from like Core Web Vitals and some of the performance side, I think there's some really nice stuff there that can just be done to kind of globally improve performance. So I think it just kind of goes back and forth a little bit on some of the things that are easier or a little more challenging, but overall I think can get to a pretty good place in terms of building out and optimizing content. But anything you would add to that?
Right, we've covered a lot of it. I think the most noticeable thing for me has been like, there's very much just not a block builder in all of it. So It, for me, I think that makes it easy, one, to like what you've kind of said throughout this entire episode, which is like stylizing and animating. Which I think is just kind of like fun from a UX standpoint. And then I also just think it like makes things way less clunky. Like the blocks never quite line up. I mean, obviously coming from Squarespace, it's like, well, this is nice, but why is my text sitting down here and like my image slightly up and to the right? And like, I have no access to the back end given this platform. So I really think, you know, as far as like needing all of the on-page optimizations you could ever want, especially for like early to seed stage SaaS companies, it's right there. It's built in. It's fairly straightforward. for 99% of the things, you probably aren't going to need a dev because you can just access what you need. And then when you're ready and you've got a budget and you can make things a little cooler, a little sleeker, then you can tap into some dev resources.
One other thing that we didn't talk about as much, but relates to what you were just saying, especially like Squarespace, you know, when you're styling or looking at things, you basically have, I think, desktop, landscape, mobile, or like desktop, tablet, mobile, I think are the three options that you have there. And so, you know, I'm a pretty big advocate for like, obviously, content is being indexed like mobile first, and there's like mobile performance aspects. But I also advocate for just like the visual design for mobile as well. And not letting that be this afterthought or like this automated, you know, it breaks styling into this or whatever. And so that's an area that I think Webflow is very powerful, is that you are able to establish more breakpoints, so that as it scales from mobile all the way to, you know, these huge iMac Retina display type of monitors, like there's a lot more you can control and visually how it looks. And then just also, like, if you know, for a certain page, like you don't have to try to make everything fall into like this one mobile page template. Like you can really kind of customize on a page level if you want to really make something work the best way it should for mobile, and you just have a lot of control there, again, without needing a lot of development support. There's things you can really make it work well. And so then on the flip side, if you did have some mobile performance issues or, you know, anything kind of coming back from Core Web Vitals or anything like that, that's kind of giving some direction on the issues there, and there's some things that are styling related, then that's pretty easy to kind of jump in to those, figure out what's going on, and be able to kind of make some of those changes yourself to ideally resolve much faster.
Yeah, absolutely. We even use that. Our blog was getting, you know, flagged for not meeting criteria for last contentful paint. And it was mostly on the mobile side of things. So it was like, okay, we'll change the animation that we don't need that loads above the fold. And kind of modify which image is there and like which one will load quicker in order to like get people the core parts of a page they need faster, and also to appease Google. So yeah, that breakdown makes it super easy, and the way it's laid out in the designer is very friendly.
Yeah, agree. Yeah, so that'll probably be my last point that I would add.
Cool. Well, I think this has been a good, you know, coverage of like Webflow, its uses, some of its pros and cons. The biggest takeaway perhaps is like it absolutely will work. If you're looking at it and you're asking the question, you know, will Webflow allow me to optimize my site and, you know, rank on Google and all of that good inbound stuff? The answer is yes. We've got the clients and the receipts to back it up, and also our own website performs pretty well. So I wouldn't hesitate.
Yeah, and I guess the last thing I would say to that point, because kind of almost taking it for granted, but there are a lot of things that that are nicely built into the global settings as well, like global canonical, automatically generating sitemap, and you know, obviously be able to have that connected to Search Console, and just a number of those things that I think can play really nicely and work well. So agree. It's definitely not a hindrance in any way to performance. And for a lot of folks who want some of that additional creative ability or to kind of control that and have more dev influence without being a developer, I think it's a great solution for that.
For sure. Well, with that, we'll wrap up this episode. You can check out this and all of our previous episodes at 10speed.io/podcast. And we highly encourage you to subscribe on whichever platform you prefer to listen to these on. And if you're enjoying the show, feel free to rate it, like it, etc.